Come on.
Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome today's guest, the strong and powerful Scott Ward. Scott, are you ready to do this?
Yes.
Excellent. Let's do this. Scott is a CFP, an AIF, and a senior relationship manager with Johnson Sterling. He is also an ambassador for the CFP board. I'm excited to have you on. Scott, tell us a little bit more about your work, some about your personal life, and tell us why it is you do what you do.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, George, thank you for having me on your show. My wife, Lauren, and I are natives of Alabama. We have two sons, Graham and Thomas, and we have lived in three major cities during our 15 years of marriage, and we are grateful to now live in Birmingham. I'm in the field of retirement services. Now that's the label, George, but truthfully, my role is to help people free themselves from financial stress. And while I may work with plan participants, the practical reality is that it's more than just about a 401k. It's about trying to make a difference in someone's life in some capacity.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, and I think that we're reading from the same script and the reason that we're working in this industry. So mm-hmm. I think that that's excellent. Well, helping people alleviate financial stress, get their financial lives on the right track, all those different things, what's an area that you found through your work that if people were able to make an improvement would yield the best outcome?
George, I think it comes down to one word, and that's stewardship. We have a finite amount of resources that we have in terms of not only money. We can always create more money, but we can't create more time. And so I think that making the most of time, and not only in our professional life, but also our resources, can make a big difference in our own financial circumstances.
I definitely agree. I mean, we only have one opportunity, one crack at this life. At least that's my belief on it. So need to be very, very, very careful about how we spend our time and our money. And I think that as we get older, we gain an appreciation for that. Do you think that it's a newer phenomenon that people are struggling with this, or is it just... What are your thoughts on why it is that people are not necessarily being good stewards with their money?
Well, it's a great question. Two questions there, actually. I don't think it's a new phenomenon. Of course, I can't go back 200 or 300 years, but what we have here are a set of circumstances to where you have 6 out of 10 American workers say their number one source of stress is finances. And you dig a little deeper and you say, well, why is that the case? And 8 out of 10 say, well, it's because I have lack of control. And I think it's that matter of control that's keeping people from moving the needle, getting ahead. And so I think that one charge that we have as practitioners is to come alongside these American workers and say, what's really going on here and how can we change the conversation in a way that can be helpful to your own set of circumstances? And I think that there are some ways that we can help people think differently about their finances and see some hope. And I like talking about those opportunities.
I would love to hear what those are, because I know that nobody well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm going to stop qualifying all my statements. People don't want to be aggressive or abrasive with people. But at the same time, sometimes people need a wake-up call. How do you balance that? How do you have that firm conversation with somebody without offending them or hurting their feelings, for lack of a better term?
Wow. So I don't know the answer to that question, George, because everybody has a you know, a different personality and a different set of circumstances. So I'm a little bit reticent to give a one sentence answer.
Sure,
but
sure.
I think your blog earlier this month on personal responsibility was a good one, and I think that changing the conversation to focus on being responsible about the circumstances is a good one. I think some people feel like that they're victims. Some people don't. Some people know that they have a set of circumstances about their relative to their finances that they don't like and that they want to change. They just don't know how. And so I think that as practitioners, we've got to come alongside people where they are and say, well, there's nothing we can do about the past. And if you really want to change, we can help with that. And I think that sometimes people start to see the light at the end of the tunnel and start to make effective changes with just taking small little steps. If they get small little wins, that's just enough encouragement to take the bigger steps. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. If you start talking to people about, everybody knows that they need a budget, right? I mean, there's nothing new about the concept of a budget. But what I find is that whenever you start talking to people about, okay, well, have you taken a strong look at your budget, and where can you find some opportunities to save more or maybe spend less? And while a lot of people that I talk to want to go through that exercise, they just find it inundating or boring or too complicated. And so I'm charged with the responsibility of saying, okay, well, maybe going through an extensive budget that requires you to fill out two or three pages on a worksheet may be too difficult at this time. But what are two or three areas in your spending habits where you maybe could spend a little less? Just two or three. That's all I'm asking, just two or three. I know for the wards, it's eating out, okay? And so what if we were to save a little bit on the spending in two or three areas, and how would we use those resources differently? So that's one area of opportunity that I had in mind.
I think that that's excellent, and I think you highlighted a lot of really important stuff. The idea of meeting people where they are, that's, I think it's tough for a 20-year-old to look down the road to age 70 and to be empathetic about, hey, 70-year-old George is going to need money too, so I really ought to be putting some money away. And the idea that we've all been through this before and we all make mistakes with money, and you shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed about it, because those emotions will sometimes cause you to do nothing and just keep doing what you're doing. So making those incremental small steps, I think, is so key for people.
It really is. And there may be someone who's listening who might say, well, you don't know what I've done and you don't know how much debt I've amassed. But I can tell you that there's no situation that is unique. There are lots of people who've struggled with similar circumstances, but with small incremental changes have found a better way. And so I don't think that any situation is hopeless.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you eat an elephant by taking one bite at a time. So I think.
So George, let's talk about the other side of this equation for just a moment, if you don't mind.
No,
I mean,
please.
Let's both the two of us have the privilege of supporting both employees and employers. You know, employers are the plan sponsors, the employees are the plan participants. I think that another opportunity, and it's not it's getting some steam now, but I think there's an opportunity for employers to gain a competitive edge of picking up on this conversation about employees' financial stress and running with it. And there's not only an advantage of actually connecting with your employees in terms of, okay, well, I understand you might be having financial stress, so I get it, and we want to, you know, provide education, we want to provide tools and resources that can help you deal with this stress. But the practical reality is employers who take financial wellness seriously can gain a competitive advantage as well, because the average expenditure per employee who has to delay retirement because they've made some wrong financial decisions over time and don't have enough set aside for retirement, the sticker price for delaying retirement for an employer is very high. It's about $50,000 per employee. And so there's two compelling reasons here at stake. It's good for the employee to talk about these things that we've talked about today, and it's good for the employer to not only understand them, but to make these conversations real and present in the workforce.
Yeah, certainly. And we get so much of the stuff that we have is from worksite. It's our health insurance, it's our 401k, and so why not offer your employees the ability to have that financial wellness or financial literacy training, whatever it might be. And there's certainly, like you're talking about, I think that it makes sense for them to do it, but there's also a clear monetary incentive for them to do that. Do you think
there is.
Go ahead.
No, you're right.
So that's easier said than done. Do you have recommendations on how an organization would evaluate or implement a program?
Well, I think that it starts with actually talking with the participants about this in real terms, in language that they can understand, in forums that are comfortable with them. I think that there's been a trend in the retirement services industry to relay all messages online. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. But how many emails do you get a day, George?
Quite a few.
Okay. All right. You're on a recorded line. How many of them do you read right away?
I endeavor to not read emails immediately at all. So
yeah, I mean, that's not unique to you. It's a common experience. And so if we think about it, there are some people who don't even have immediate access to their emails, or when they do have access to their emails, they are very selective in the amount of time that they actually invest in reading those emails. And so I think we've got to find ways to not only talk about the right things, but communicate with people in a way that they want to be communicated with. And sometimes that means face-to-face communication and actually listening and responding to the feedback that they give. And so I think employers can gain a competitive advantage and say, we want to host presentations. We want to send out printed materials. We want to send out emails. We want to think about multiple channels of in which we can actually communicate with our participants. But the practical reality is, George, it's not a matter of the amount of content that's the problem. It's not a financial literacy problem. It's a circumstance of participants actually having a real opportunity to talk about what's really on their mind, and someone actually listening to those concerns and saying, "I hear you, and there's a better way, and let's talk about, you know, moving the needle together."
I think that all definitely makes sense, and that is, I agree. I think that people are looking for that. We are absolutely inundated by information 24 hours a day now, and it's in our pockets, and it's everywhere we look. So much of this stuff does have a tendency to become noise, and if you can actually in person and make a connection, I don't think either one of us are saying that we're going to wave a magic wand and all of a sudden half of your employees or 100% of your employees, they're going to change their behavior. But if you could get 10% or 15% of your employees every year to change their behavior, well, a couple of years into that program, you'd probably be really, really glad that you did.
Absolutely.
And I do think that, going back to what we're talking about, that's the incremental change, that's how an individual gets out of financial difficulty. It's one bite at a time. It's reducing debt a little bit of a time. It's saving money and getting your workforce in a place where they are going to actually be able to retire should they choose to do that, and they're not stressed at work. They're not spending time worrying about their finances instead of helping your company to be more successful. I think that's a benefit for everybody involved.
No doubt about it. I mean, if you think about it, and the PricewaterhouseCoopers has a financial wellness survey that they produce annually. And one of their findings is that employees are spending an inordinate amount of time at work dealing with personal financial issues, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 hours per week.
That's an awful long time right there.
Yeah. So what if we can empower these employees in a way to where they're spending less time at work dealing with these financial issues, and that they can gain more control over their financial circumstances. And so one of the charges that I also take responsibility for is the whole concept of communication. If I'm speaking to an audience of retirement plan participants, one key element that I keep in mind is this: it's not necessarily what I say that's the most important element. It's what the audience hears. And so we've got a lot of terminology that we use in our industry, George, and that sometimes doesn't always resonate with the audience. And we could spend hours on that subject, but I think that what people are looking for is some straight talk, to your point earlier, in terms of let's be honest about the circumstances. But I think what people find helpful is to say, okay, well, I know about a budget, I know about a worksheet, but boy, if we can find ways to help them think creatively or maybe differently, have a fresh approach to thinking about the same subjects, but just in a different way, sometimes that can help them take that first incremental step that you were just talking about a moment ago.
I definitely agree. Everything, the language we use, everything. It's so important to actually reach people. And so at the end of the day, that's what we're interested in doing is actually being useful, right?
Right. So. Right.
Well, excellent stuff. Well, Scott, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
Stewardship and control There are only about 16 hours a day when we're not sleeping. There are only that equates to about 112 hours per week, only 5,824 hours per year. And so I think that it's important to step back and say there are lots of things that I can't change, but the things that I do have power over in terms of how I spend my time, how I manage my resources hour by hour, day by day, can make a meaningful difference over time. And I'll just go back to one element that I mentioned earlier in our conversation, George, and that is this. If we feel like we are just stuck, and even though we may want to save more, we just are finding difficulty in actually finding the resources to save more or to whittle down debt or do both, let's think about just two or three areas in our spending habits now that where we can maybe either spend less or even carve out altogether. And let's use those resources that we would otherwise spend toward our own financial goals, whether it's saving more or paying down debt. But I think just finding those two or three areas can make a big difference over time.
Well, I love it. That is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So, Scott, thank you